Hello, listeners of the Accents podcast on WUKY. I'm your host, Katerina Stoikova, and this episode has been brought to you by Accents Publishing, an independent press for brilliant voices. Today's brilliant guest is poet Samar Johnson. Hi, Samar, welcome to Accents.
Hi, Katerina. How are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm doing fine. I'm so excited about our conversation. And I'm most excited to talk about your brand new poetry book, Blue Violet, Haint Spaces. How did this book come about?
Well, in 2022, I said to myself that I was going to stop pretending that I was not a writer. I decided to join the Lexington Writers Room to have a space to write because at the time my youngest was not quite two, and things were just, chaotic at home, and I needed a place to be able to get lost in the creative process, and then also to have the space to do my least favorite thing, which is editing. And so I'm just going to take the poems that I've written over the last, few months, and I'll edit them and I'll add about 25 more and I'll put it out. I'll query a few publishing companies and see what happens. So I put it together and I sent it out to a few presses, and someone said yes, which was thrilling and exciting, and also a feeling of, oh my God, what do I do now? But the premise of the collection is it's a reading of and an exploration of my experience being Black and queer and Southern. It has some maybe mystical elements to it, which is reminiscent of Southern Gothic, but it also has some, light and beautiful things as well.
Well, I consider this a spiritual book, a feminist book, a book of healing, a book of self-love, a book of contradictions, always too much and never enough. I really enjoyed reading it, and I was moved by these poems. I'm wondering, Samar, would you mind reading us several now?
I would be so honored to read you a few. Absolutely. So I'm going to read the first poem, which is entitled Where I'm From. Where I'm from, I cannot return. That portal between my mother and the soft deep is closed. The memories twist round appendages, piercing skin like briar patches, each thorn an epithet, a beating, a strangling. Cutting them away is pointless. The tangled mess of branches grows back from new places. I forgot masked scars tread the journey I've taken to go back. All lead me to some dusted crossroad. Where I'm from, the love is all dried up, like a rusted bathtub knob that sighs in the place of the water you were in search of. The tepid, hard water rolls down my body, pores open to receive what pours out from above. There are too many droplets to count. The moments of guilt in my life, they, like this water, come together and form what feels like immovable borders. Places I cannot cross, cracks in my imperfect view of self. They say water remembers. If this is true, may it remember the times I knew who I was before I allowed guilt to grow like scaly bark around my heart. I close my eyes. I pray to the water, asking it to forgive me for all the times I said but didn't do. Words spoken that cut like dog teeth and flesh, glares that could turn Medusa to stone. I am love, but I have not always been loving. My own waters erupt from morning tired eyes. They roll down cheeks and mix with earth water, tying themselves together in fortification for the baptism that is needed to soften the hardened grief edges of my heart.
These are so beautiful, Samar.
And I'm going to read, I'll read Shores and I'll also read Venus and Leo. Shores. In the seam that meets the water and earth is a third place, an existence where duality meets its death. When they ask you, what is their gender? Tell them it's in between the places they cannot see, where the heart makes a mess of the brain. And Venus and Leo. Fire golds run deep in blood reds. Take on the sun. Weave its essence into your sinews so that the fibers beneath skin might glow and burn away your doubt of your own divinity. If you would only allow yourself to ingest your own magnificence, allow it to poison the deep well, full of the questions that keep their lies etched in the muscles of your heart.
Wow, Samar, these are so moving.
Thank you.
What do you consider to be the deep Gothic South?
The deep Gothic South is the experience of being intertwined with what is present and what we can see, and the spirit world, which, depending on your experience, could be good or bad, malevolent, benevolent, and the also the experience of what was experienced in the past, the pain, the hurt, the struggles of enslavement, and how that is passed forward through generations, through racism and the ugliness that we, the systemic oppression. So it's a weaving of all of those experiences, without discrediting the joy, the beauty, the warmth of the sun hitting your skin, you know, the taste of the first tomato of the season.
I could move this conversation in several different directions right now. I have questions about journeying. I have questions about healing. I have questions about ensoulment and protection, really. But I am going to ask you a couple more questions about your book before we move to other fascinating topics. You are the cover artist. Describe the cover.
Yes, I
Tell us
am.
about it. It is gorgeous.
Oh, thank you so much. So, I call myself a creative. I think because I enjoy expressing this creative life force through different mediums. I used to be an opera singer, so there's music there as well, but when I feel the need to create through the medium of visual art, it's usually maybe impressionistic or up to the interpretation of someone who is looking at it, which is also, I think, in the way I write as well. And so the channeling of this piece was me sitting and being with my spirit and allowing it to come through. So it's oil pastels.
Wait a minute, I have to backtrack a little bit because in one sentence you said, I used to be an opera singer. And kind of like if that was a very casual thing, I gotta hear more about that.
Okay, so I used to be an opera singer. I started opera singing when I was maybe, or I started training to sing in high school when I was about 15. And I kept singing really until maybe 4 years ago. And it was an amazing ride, and it gave me this fantastic relationship and understanding and opportunity to be with the medium of music, with meeting all kinds of people from all over the earth. And it also gave me this appreciation for crafting, being in the element of waiting for something to take form and to play with things. Because with singing, you're using your entire body. You're using your entire body to project your voice in a room. And in order to do that and also have clarity of text and also to interpret the text and the music, you have to go into the practice room every single day, playing and exploring and being curious. So I think the way that this really impacts how I write is I don't have a lot of the struggles that I think some younger writers can have, which is being afraid of sharing your art or being afraid of taking a risk. Because I would say that me just deciding that I was going to publish a book is pretty risky. But I think those years and years of having to put myself out there in auditions and in performances has given me a different view of sharing my art.
What is the effect of singing, opera singing, or singing in general on stored trauma?
I love this. I love this question. So this question weaves in my work now as an ensoulment doula. So before I stopped singing, I went back to school to get a DMA in teaching voice because I realized that singing was very, very helpful in the release of traumatic memory, but only when there's a conscious exploration with curiosity. So, what I was finding in my practice room or in seeing with some of my students, that they would reach these walls in their technique, and it had less to do with maybe, although sometimes with muscles, maybe not communicating with one another, but a lot of times their hangups came from sometimes very painful things that happened to them. And for me, I realized that You can't feel safe to express painful things if there is not a safeness in the body. There's not a feeling of being present in the moment. And so part of my work as a voice teacher was getting people to trust their bodies, to trust that their intuition. And my belief is that intuition and creativity are two sides of the same coin, that the only difference is in how we are perceiving that it is being used. So as a teacher, I was really trying to help my students in trusting their intuitive gnosis because it's within your body. Intuition is something that you can't explain. And I feel like the voice and vocal production is also something that you can't explain. You can't, I could try to tell you how I would make a sound, but you're not going to be able to produce the same sound because your body is different. And so the language that I used in my voice lessons was that of getting them to trust that intuition. And, I would still tell them this muscle does this and this muscle does that, but the way that you connect to those muscles is different. And so seeing my students years out, so beautiful, and it makes you want to cry, but like seeing them in places where they feel proud of being themselves. And they come to me and say, I never thought it was possible for me to do this until I began to study with you. That had a profound impact on me. I could talk a lot about the somatics of reverberations of sound within the body, but ultimately, I think that it's the trusting of the intuition that helps you to heal.
You know, Samar, that a whole lot sounds to me like teaching someone to be connected to oneself.
Yes.
Say more about your work as ensoulment doula. As far as I know, this term is something that you coined.
Yes. So I am in the business of helping people to bring the conscious understanding that they never left their souls. Their souls never left them. They've always been whole and complete. But somehow along the way, between our family of origin, struggles and trauma and societal expectations, we lose that sense of self, that strong compass within us. And we think that we will be safer by doing what we think other people or systems think we should do. And we end up not just living unfulfilling lives, but in a lot of cases, it can really exasperate certain mental illnesses as well. And so while I'm not a psychiatrist or psychologist, I am in the business of helping people to remember their way back home to themselves, to be sovereign within themselves, because that personal liberation leads us to that collective liberation. And I don't know about you, but when I see another person living their truth, I feel encouraged to do the same. I feel encouraged to find myself within the depths of myself and do the same.
You can kind of tell when you see someone who is living an authentic life, right? I mean, it's you can feel it.
Absolutely. And people will call that charisma, or they'll say a person is magnetic, but that magneticism comes through someone viewing themselves as their own sun. That's something that I learned with astrology is viewing ourselves as our own personal sun within a universe of suns of other people allows us to recognize we are sovereign and yet we're all connected as well.
I'll ask you more about astrology later. But now I want to ask you, what does it take to be a shadow worker? I mean, are you the wounded healer?
So I don't know if you know the mythology of Chiron, the wounded healer. You do? So Chiron has been a very important guide in my work. You know, they say that his in the his mythology that his wound that would not heal was the piercing of his foot by the poisoned arrow that was poisoned by the blood of a hydra. But for me, when you think about his origin story and the fact that he was born from a his mother being taken advantage of, and then his mother abandoned him. She said she didn't want anything to do with him and left him alone. That, to me, is that wound that never heals. And no matter what our experiences are, those core wounds of abandonment or feeling like you are not enough, or you know, these are core experiences that we all have. The way that they move in our lives just may be different with whatever experience brought it out. But as a shadow worker, shadow holder, I allow people to sit with their complexity, their duality. Many times we think the things that we think about ourselves that are terrible are really not that terrible. Most of us are not out here murdering people. Most of us out here are struggling to tell the truth about ourselves. And so when we can see ourselves mirrored within these myths and, you know, things like astrology, we're able to see ourselves as whole and complete. And what I'm really hoping to do in this work is move people away from this idea of things being either good or bad. A lot of times our experiences carry both. A lot of times our experiences carry happy, sad, a whole range of things. This idea that you can only be one thing or the other is really it's a prison that we live in.
Not to mention it's a simplification. Things
Yes.
are so much more complicated than one or the other. And all these journeys to the underworld, how do you make sure to always come back?
You know, there are a couple of ways. One is realizing that the underworld is not a place of like shame, or it's not a place that you are going to lose yourself. It's a place of retrieval. And so allowing yourself to be comfortable with the dark. And I think most people have aligned this idea of darkness being dangerous when really darkness is only dangerous because we perceive that we can't see. We can't see things, so we can't protect ourselves. But when we allow ourselves to tap into our other senses, our intuition, then we realize that we are connected to so many other things within the darkness. There, in fact, if we think about creation, creation happens within the womb, which is dark. A child does not see the light really until they come out of the womb. And The other thing that we see is the mirroring of that underworld journey through the cycles of not just the seasons, but also in our life. We don't stay in one place forever. Even if you were to say, decide to sit in one place, you die in that place. Eventually, your body becomes a part of the earth, which gives birth to something else, which means eventually you move to another place. So this idea that we're always going to be stuck in some place is another mental prison and not the reality of the life that we live.
I would like to go back to your book, though, and I want to ask you what makes you most proud of this book?
What makes me most proud of this book is that it is here. I had ancestors that were not allowed to read or write. It was illegal for them to do that. And I had ancestors that would have wanted to express themselves creatively, but they didn't get an opportunity because they had to work to take care of their families. And so the fact that it is just in this world is the most pride. With their help, I am living a dream that was just not possible for them. So every time I look at this book, and I've had some friend I've had friends and people have bought the book. They'll send me a picture of it when they bought it, and I cry every single time because I really cannot believe it is a physical thing that people can hold in their hands and they can read and they can be. Someone said to me that they read the third poem and they had to stop and start writing. That's how it inspired them. And to know that I have given birth to something that will also inspire others to give birth to something, that's, I don't care if I ever made a penny, that's all I would want, is that people would feel strong enough to trust their voice.
I would love to hear several more poems.
Where does all the love you never gave me go? Will it be buried in the grave with you? The lump in my throat, and this particular poem was generated through a prompt in a writing circle that I was in. So writers, if you have been delaying getting into a writing circle, get in the writing circle. Okay. The lump in my throat. Not long ago, every time it began its resurrection and made its rise, I would swallow razors made of lies disguised as protection. I need to, or there is no time to, is what my mind framed as the logical response. Now, as I write or bake, rock my sick child, remember a wound, I make welcome its rise as it gives way to another version of me that steps out of my shadow. Crushed. I didn't know that those who harmed me did not actually possess the power to crush my spirit with words. Why did I replay these lies, memorizing them as if they are sacred? As if they belong in my cells, informing the future of their work. Instead of crushing the hollowed bones and painting my face so that they might see themselves and know their place. I'm gonna read Named Yourself Witch. The stink of death drips heavy in the stale air. The tuneful screams of the cicadas mark high summer. South, count who's left after the hangings. I peel the slice of tangerine free of its white ropes with my tongue, like a finished cord cutting ritual. I know it won't be long before they start looking for my death body, too. But it won't be swinging from a tree. I brought my own knife.
These are so beautiful and so moving, Samar. I am so excited for your book and for it to find its readers. What are you working on these days?
Well, I am currently working on a memoir prose, mythic memoir prose, if that is, I don't think that's a genre, but that's what it is. And it's a remembering, retelling of the story of Capricorn, the myth of Capricorn, in my story. So there's a weaving of these two myths. And this project came to be because I had begun narrative therapy writing with some of my clients and had found it to be incredibly healing. But this process of writing my own story in a way in which I'm the archetype. I am the hero. I am. What if I could have a relationship with my story of origin that was one like a myth? And we tell these myths of, you know, Greek or the myths of the Orisha or, you know, any of these deities, and we tell them with excitement, and we can see the allegory, and we pull all of this meaning from it. But when we look at our own stories, we look at them with disgust or disappointment or sadness. And I want to reclaim my story. So it's that's what I'm working on currently. It's called Ensouling. It's a tentative title, but that's what I'm working on right now.
That's fascinating, Samar, and I wish you best of luck with both the book and the new work. It's been a pleasure to speak with you today, and I hope to see you in person sometime soon.
Yes, you will. We'll see each other soon. Thank you so much for having me. This has been so wonderful.